Hello there, lovely audio booers. Robert Llewellyn here. I'm here to tell you about the newly arriving updates that are going to be appearing on the Man in the Rubber Mask audio boo subscription feed. I'm trying to use all the right terms. So if you subscribe to the Man in the Rubber Mask, it costs £4.99. And for that, you get the entire audiobook of the original version of The Man in the Rubber Mask, which was published in 1993. But of course, it only covers the first up to series 5 of Red Dwarf. What I'm now about to upload onto that feed is the chapter that deals with series 6. And in a few weeks, I'll upload the chapter that deals with series 7. And a few weeks after that, I'll upload the chapter that deals with series 8. After that, I will upload a chapter that deals with Red Dwarf Back to Earth. And then, finally, once the new series of Red Dwarf has been broadcast, I will upload the most recently written chapter, which is about Red Dwarf X. It doesn't cost any more. All the people who subscribe to the book already will get free updates. See, that's how you do marketing. You charge people some money and then you tell them that they're getting stuff for free. No, it's not free. It costs £4.99, but it doesn't cost any more than £4.99. So the finished audiobook is going to be something like 8, 9, 10, maybe over 10 hours long. It's going to be quite a long book. There's some very funny moments, because luckily I had time when we were making the most recent series of Red Dwarf to brush up my memories of things that took place on Red Dwarf long ago, because I was in the company of the rest of the cast, and their memory is, well, it's not only better than mine, it is better than mine, but of course it's different, so their memories are slightly different to mine. So that was very good to be able to catch up with them and members of the crew, the background crew who have worked on Red Dwarf for many years. So very much looking forward to the new series of Red Dwarf. Comes out in end of September, beginning of October on Dave in the UK, and globally on all over the world, in a global, worldwide, global way after that, in all manner of formats. I know it's going to be on Netflix in the USA. Red Dwarf already is, but I know it will be on that. It's on iTunes. It'll be on a lot of PBS stations, I think, are going to be broadcasting it. So it will be available in the United States and Canada, I know, and Australia and New Zealand. Other than that, I haven't got a clue. Japan. Definitely Japan. Yes, I've just remembered. Anyway, that's enough for me. Here is a sample from chapter, whatever number it is. Well, chapter 1 of The Man in the Rubber Mask, part 2, which deals with series 6. And in particular, this little sequence deals with when we were recording the episode Sirens, which was enormous fun. I hope you enjoy it. One of the locations which became legendary in the small inward-looking circle of the Red Dwarf cast was the large derelict Bankside power station on the south bank of the River Thames. We arrived there very early in the morning and had a quick wander round. Inside a truly enormous hall were massive lumps of rusting electricity turbines, pipes, piles of twisted metal resembling the remnants of Leningrad during World War II. It was the most extraordinary and filthy old dump, dark, damp and fairly stinky. You can visit the building now, although it looks rather different and smells a lot better. It's called the Tate Modern Art Gallery. You still get a fairly good impression of the scale of the place when you go into the main entrance. It's bloody enormous. We filmed several scenes from Sirens in the building, using a grubby old caravan plonked in the middle of the cavernous generator room as our base. Playing Professor Mamet was a woman I'd had a bit of a crush on since I was a kid. Jenny Agata looked stunning as Professor Mamet. She was Crichton's creator, and although his mind was synthetic and unseducible by the evil genetically engineered insecty things, as soon as the siren took the form of Professor Mamet, Crichton was doomed. The scene required Crichton to get into the garbage compactor and crush himself into a cube. I remember reading the script and thinking it was very funny. The whole idea was that I would squat down with a box on top of me and do a slow, shuffly walk, Crichton's flattened head sticking out of the front of the box. I tried it in the studio, without a box, and although it wasn't easy, it was clearly very funny. However, as is often the way in the crazy world of showbiz, the smooth studio floor and the trainers I was wearing in rehearsal were not quite the same as the metal rungs of a raised walkway and Crichton's massive robo-boots.
If you are trying to design a flooring and footwear system to ensure minimum slippage, maximum grip, the combination present under my feet that day would be pretty close to global number one. So we shot all manner of scenes in the rusting works of the Bankside Power Station. It was cold, damp and miserable, just how Crichton loves it. The rest of the cast were freezing. I was comfortably balmy. Ah, smug mode, sirs. The very low temperatures in this vast wreck of a building are just perfect for the rubber-headed one, I said as we gathered on the set. My joy was not reflected back to me. The rest of the cast wrapped in huge warm coats until Andy de Emeny said action. We were all very thrilled to be in the presence of Jenny Agutter, though. For the very few of you who never saw The Railway Children, it's hard to imagine the impact of being in her presence. I believe the term MILF is now in common usage. Just as well it hadn't been coined in 1993, as we would all have been using it far too often, and that wouldn't have been pleasant for Ms. Agutter. Jenny and I shot the scene where Professor Mamet makes Crichton climb into the garbage compactor to be crushed into a cube of waste metal. I then had to go off to the little caravan and get changed into the cuboid Crichton outfit. The cube had been constructed with remnants of Crichton's old costumes and gloves stuck on the outside. Basically, a perfectly square Crichton. My mask was semi-removed from around the back of my head, and the excess rubber was stuck on the outside of the box, making it look as if my head had been crushed flat. It was a difficult procedure that required me to lie on the floor of the dirty old caravan as the box was glued to me. The Crichton face, obviously with me still attached, poked through a hole in the box. When Jenny Agutter had finished all her scenes, she entered the caravan to find me lying on the floor surrounded by busy makeup women. "I'm going to get changed now," she said. "I hope you'll be a gentleman and not look." "Of course not," I said. "I'm sorry it's so cramped." So I lay on the floor of a dirty old caravan in the middle of Bankside Power Station while Jenny Agutter stripped off in front of me. And guess what, dear readers? As Mr. Craycharles is constantly reminding me, I'm a middle-class, wet liberal twat. I didn't even sneak a tiny peek.
"What a waste,"
said Craig when he heard tell of my exemplary behaviour a little later.
"Not even a little sneaky peek."
"No, nothing, Craigie. It would have been rude." Craig walked around in circles holding his head.
"I don't believe it, la. He was in a caravan with Jenny Agutter, fucking starkers, and he didn't give it a gawp."
When Jenny had left, I opened my eyes and I was praised by Andrea, my long-time makeup artist, for not looking. "Very well done, Robert," she said as she dabbed glue behind Crichton's flattened head. "I thought you'd have a little peeping Tom Gawp because you're such a pervert, but you didn't. Jenny Agutter was standing right above you in nothing but her knickers, and you didn't look."
"Oh, she wasn't, was she?" I asked.
"Oh yes, Robert, she was nearly completely naked. She's very beautiful, but of course you'll never know because you didn't look, you pervert." Back on the set, I was helped into my position for climbing out of the garbage compactor. It was only then that I realized something. If you are in a situation where you are likely to trip over and fall on your face, what is the first totally automatic reaction you have to the falling sensation? That's correct. You put out your arms to break the fall and protect your face. It's not an intellectual exercise. You don't need to study such behavior at post-grad level. It's just something we all do. Well, put someone in non-slippery shoes on a rusty grating walkway, enclose them in a box with their arms inside, and ask them to shuffle along as best they can. Suddenly, the whole tippy forward thing becomes rather alarming. If I had tipped forward, the first thing to come into contact with the metal grating of the raised walkway would have been my nose. Okay, to be specific, the rubber glued to my nose, but I'll be frank. That does not offer a great deal of protection. I managed to make the short walk from the garbage compactor to the edge of the platform without facial injury. This was then followed by the empty box being thrown down on the rubber and wire siren standing beneath, allowing Crichton to save the day.